Good morning. Today is the 19th of March, 2015. I'm calling what is known as the special meeting of the Housing Commission to order. It's called the special meeting only because it's on a day not normally our meeting day. Normally our meeting day would have been last Friday, but some of us were out of town on official business and could not be here, so we decided we would have it today so that we could have make sure that we had a quorum. And in following that in line, I'm going to announce that we do have a quorum. There are five members in good standing present. Two have excused absences. And we'll proceed. Just as you can see, we have a big room, but the room is full. And in addition to that, we have another room. What is normally the lunchroom on this floor, and there are people sitting in there. Now, I'm going to read all of this, but there and there, they can hear. We're broadcasting the audio of this meeting into there so that they know what's going on. Because of that, I need to announce that every vote that we take today will be a roll call vote, because that's required so that the people who are not able to be in the room but are present can identify who voted for what. Okay, so that's a little difference in our procedure. All right, so we anticipated a large audience for members of the public, so there are special instructions we would like to provide to you before we begin our meeting. And I'm reading these so that anyone who's walked in the last 2 or 3 minutes will be fully advised as to what their procedure is going to be. Our boardroom only holds about 50 participants, which includes staff and members of the public. To accommodate the potential overflow of members of the public, the San Diego Housing Commission's lunchroom has been transformed into a meeting room just down the hall, and that is able to accommodate another 75 individuals. From the lunchroom, members of the public will be able to listen to the meeting via streaming audio, and they will be able to participate at this public forum as well. This is the same procedure used by the City Council when there's not sufficient space within council chambers and overflow is accommodated within the committee rooms. The public listens to the matter until it is time for them to testify, at which time they move to council chambers to testify. And so that you'll know, so that the people in the next room will know, there's about a 10 to 20 second delay between the time we say something here in this room and the time they actually hear it. It won't be totally contemporaneously. There are speaker slips in the lunchroom. They will be collected and brought here to the boardroom, where speaker slips are also available. There are two types of speaker slips. There's actually three. Those who are in favor of today's proposal on any of our proposals will fill out a yellow form, and those who are opposed will fill out the pink form. If you wish to speak, please fill out one of those forms. Also, in a moment or two, I'm going to also allow for the public discussion period that normally precedes our meetings. And that's the third form, which is the white form. You fill this out if you wish to address the commission, but not on an item that is currently on the agenda for today. You can speak on any subject. Now, just so that you'll know, people who fill out the white form speaking on a subject not on the agenda will get the normal 3 minutes per speaker that is allocated to them. If you suddenly start speaking on this, claiming not to be speaking on the agenda, and we find that you are in fact speaking on the agenda, you'll be cut off unceremoniously by me and asked to fill out the appropriate form, and we'll call you back later. Okay. I'm going to call five when we get to the actual speaker request form for items on the agenda. I will call out five names at a time, and that way people can take care of the transport of getting ready to be a speaker at the podium so that we don't have a lot of downtime. We have, at this moment, we have 24 speakers who have requested to speak on one particular item on our agenda. And as a result of that, because of the time constraints, instead of 3 minutes per speaker, you're going to be allocated 1 minute per speaker. And if one of you gets up and says, well, I'm going to give my minute to someone else, identify them, and then sit down, and we'll allow that person to speak for their minute and your minute. Okay. The limiting to 1 minute is in accordance with California statutes, so please no one get up to tell us to use their minute to tell us that that's illegal to do that. Angie Rosati-Rios, our meeting secretary, sitting over here at the table, and or our general counsel sitting, the distinguished gentleman sitting at the end of this table, will keep track of the time with a stopwatch, and the chairman will thank you for your comments. In the U.S. Supreme Court, which this does not have the majesty of, they have three lights. They have a green light when you're still within your time. They have an orange light or yellow light that says, hey, you got 5 minutes. They get 30 minutes total in there. And then they got a red light. And the Supreme Court says, the minute the red light comes on, you don't even say another word. You just sit down. You don't even say thank you. Okay. We'll let you say thank you on it. But we will ask for you to please cut it short as soon as possible. I've already talked about if you want to give your time to someone else. After you've made your comments, you'll be able to return to your seating area and listen to the rest of the public comment and discussion by the Board of Commissioners. This public testimony will be taken after staff makes their presentation. Okay. We'll first call out the names for members of the public who are seated in the lunchroom. And I'm going to go with those who are opposed to whichever item it is they want to speak. And then I'll go for those who wish to speak in favor of. So we're going to hear all of the arguments on one side or the other at the same time. All votes today will be taken by roll call. I've mentioned that previously, so that individuals seated in the lunchroom will be able to identify which commissioner voted for or against any particular item. We thank you for coming, and now we'll move further into our regular meeting. So the first item at this point is calling for public comment on a non-agenda item. From the lunchroom, we have two speakers. One of them is Carolina Ermanix, and another one is Mamie McCall. And then following those two will be Martha Welch, who apparently is in this room. So that will be the order of the public comment portion. So is Carolina Ermanix here? Can anyone check the hallway and see if maybe she's walking from the lunchroom? Okay. Don't you love the suspense? Are you Carolina? I'm going to tell you that I'm not going to allow you to speak right now. And the reason is, right after I called your name as a person wishing to speak on a non-agenda item, I noticed that you're actually here to speak on the agenda item because you filled out one of those request forms too. Well, but if you're going to speak, if you're going to speak on an agenda item, you have to wait. Okay? Okay, but that's fine. But in the event that you start speaking on item 100, I'm going to interrupt you. Okay. All right. In that case, please push the button and turn the microphone on. Might want to raise the microphone up towards you. And please identify yourself by name. And we don't need your specific address, but if you live in the city of San Diego, please say so. If you live in a different city, please say that as well.
Okay. Good morning, members of the commission, audience members. My name is Carolina C. Hermanix, and I am a resident of San Diego. And I have over 270 signatures in agreement with this statement. Keep Alpha Project Winter Shelter and the Veterans Tent open year-round, properly funded and staffed by Alpha Project and Veterans Village San Diego staff. I believe we are now at 280 signatures of people directly impacted by this policy, and I believe I did put that on my speaker form that I am representing people who are directly impacted, homeless persons themselves, and to some extent providers. A second petition has about the same amount, 267 signatures agreeing with this statement. Keep Alpha Project Neil Good Day Center open, properly funded, and run by Alpha Project.
I have to interrupt you.
Yes.
The Neil Good Day Center is part of item 100.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
And so our understanding was, if you're going to speak on item 100, you need to come back when we're calling item 100.
Okay. If I'm called up again, I'll do that.
Okay.
These are my positions, and thank you very much for
thank
your
you.
Kind attention.
Okay. Mamie McCall. And you heard the part about speak into the microphone and identify yourself.
Yes,
okay.
Good morning. My name is Mamie McCall, and for the past, can I start? Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I was like, my name is Mamie McCall, and for the past 18 years, I've been employed here at the San Diego Housing Commission. I am currently a senior housing assistant with the San Diego Housing Commission. I am speaking to you today as Chief Steward of SEIU Local 221, the union that represents the San Diego Housing Commission line staff. Every day, the San Diego Housing Commission members work hard to provide access to quality care, including long-term service and support for the San Diego's most vulnerable populations. We are proud to help expand affordable housing opportunities to San Diegans every day. We are also proud to work for an organization that is at the forefront of eradicating homelessness throughout San Diego. I am here today to express our concern about the performance incentive system. I would like to distribute the following document to the board. Wonderful. Thank you. Over the past several weeks, SEIU Local 221 has conducted a comparison of the staff bonuses by staff classification. Here are our findings. As our handout illustrates, employees are eligible for a bonus of 0%, 2%, and 4%. I think that the numbers are pretty clear. 17 out of 18 executives and directors get bonuses almost all of them at the maximum of 4%. The line staff that the San Diego Housing Commission, SEIU, represent have gotten less bonuses in almost two-thirds of the cases that are at the lower level. The numbers do not add up. There are many cases where the supervisor receives a 4% bonus, but the staff that reports to them receives 0% or a 4%. Last week, we shared these findings with council member Sherry Leitner, and we will also be sharing this with a number of city council members in the coming weeks as well. We have a number of ideas about how to improve the performance incentives for our staff, and we are happy to share. But today we are challenging the leadership of the commission to consider the message that these numbers sends to the employees that work so hard every day and make some changes. We feel it is important that line staff have an opportunity to directly participate in the process and make realistic goals that are attainable. This improves not only morale, but has a direct impact on the quality of services being provided to the community that we serve. We need to base these goals on real work done and not arbitrary blanket goals that go above and beyond our job duties and classifications. We are asking the Housing Commission to conduct a thorough investigation into the current performance incentive system using the findings provided by SEIU to rebuild the structure.
Ms. McCall?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your service to the organization as a whole.
Thank you very much. Have a great one.
And last is Martha Welch. Are you her?
Yes.
Oh, great. If you'll also speak into the microphone as to your name and whether or not you're a citizen of San Diego or elsewhere, and then continue talking.
Okay, Martha Welch, downtown San Diego. Who is this vice president designee who gets the $12 million? There's no housing, but maybe one or two housing, HUD and low housing seniors in 40 years. The Bay Bears are here. You can't build a fast one for me, believe me. You can do this because you did this on the old system. Look at Form 15. 2 years. Be perfect. It can be done under the old system. Under the old system, you have 11 C. You can see out the window right over there. Also, selling is right over there. And it was a tax center now. It was HUD and the big bin. They're not filling Form 15 is nobody's going in there, believe. It's engine. No one's engine that. Now, so much. Now, a bit cedar. You can't even, can't get in on the list at all. That shows how much engine about that. We need more senior building, low housing. It's a travesty how much not built. We need some money for the vice president, whoever it is, believe me. I'm fighting clean government on this, in this city. We've had the worst days in this county. Let's have the best days in this county, believe me. The list downstairs, one only has the price. How can you fit budget? I don't know how you do that. You would call everybody on there, and it's not big enough, believe me. Again, you can't build them fast for me or anything. You have to call everybody on the list to find out what's available. There's not much money. Again, Celadon was changed by Bill Horn. It's taxing and not filling it. 12, right over there. It's a big thing, huge. Bill Horn, believe me. So you got to get better on this because it's been 40 years you built enough for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That concludes the public comment section. The next item on our agenda is commissioner comments. Commissioners, do you have anything you wish to say today? Seeing no indication of such, I'll say something, and that is that this morning, shortly before the meeting began, Commissioner Tusson, sitting over here to my right, was sworn in for his to begin a second term on the commission. Mr. Tusson has served honorably for his first appointment, and we're looking forward to his continued contributions here. So, Frank? Congratulations. Mr. Gentry, do you have any comments as the president of the organization?
Yes, sir, I do. I have four brief items I'd just like to share with the board. The events that have occurred since the last board meeting. On February the 20th, we were very fortunate to receive a visit here from the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development out of Washington, D.C., Secretary Julian Castro toured a property by the name of COM 22 in Logan Heights. This is a development being constructed by the Bridge nonprofit organization, and it has our support in it. The tour was hosted by U.S. Representative Juan Vargas of the 51st District, in whose district this property is located. The secretary was also joined by HUD Western Regional Director Ophelia Bascal from San Francisco. Secretary Castro referred to COM 22 as truly a model of what we would like to see nationally in communities across the United States. COM 22 is a 200-unit mixed-use transit-oriented development by Bridge Housing Development Corporation and the MAC project here in San Diego. The development was selected for the tour because it included both federal financing support in it and federal, showing the kind of partnership that localities can do with the federal government in producing new affordable housing. Also attending this were a number of you all, including Board Chairman Grambling, Vice Chair Spoon, and Commissioners Moraga, Surdy, and Ertassin, and also State Senator Ben Hueso, Speaker of the California State Assembly Tony Atkins, State Assembly Member Lorena Gonzalez, San Diego City Council Members Todd Gloria, and David Alvarez. This was a wonderful meeting, and to be able to get a HUD secretary to come visit you is most unusual, and we should be very proud of this. Also on March the 4th, we participated in the Cielo Carmel groundbreaking. This is a property in Pacific Highlands Ranch. Cielo Carmel is a 195-unit development for low-income families being built by Affirmed Housing Group under inclusionary housing requirements for the North City Future Urbanizing Area. At the officiating of the groundbreaking was City Council President Sherry Leitner. This board, the Housing Commission Board, authorized the issuance of a total of up to $334.6 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds for this property, which represents more than 72% of the cost. I'll point out that this property is well north of Interstate 8 and reflects the goal both of this board and the City Council to disperse affordable housing as much as possible throughout the city. On March the 13th, the City Heights Community Development Corporation, Wakeland Housing and Development Corporation, and the San Diego Housing Commission commemorated the completion of a major rehabilitation project in City Heights. That was last Friday. This project improved 129 units of affordable housing apartments at 10 scattered sites and preserved the units as affordable housing for an additional 55 years. The City Heights Community Development Corporation owns and manages the 10 properties, and Wakeland was responsible for the rehabilitation. The Housing Commission provided $6.2 million of existing loans for the City Heights apartments, which leveraged an additional $8 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, as well as $4.8 million of tax credit equity to finance the nearly $16.7 million rehabilitation. So I think that what these efforts represent is good progress not only in providing new affordable housing in the city, but also preserving what's already here. One additional item of very good news. On March the 11th, the Housing Commission was notified that we had been selected for a federal grant of up to $150,000 to develop a project focused on providing supportive housing services for chronically homeless individuals. The grant is from the Corporation for National and Community Social Services Social Innovation Fund, a national project, and a program called Pay for Success. We applied for this grant through the Corporation for Supportive Housing, and we were one of only six subgrantees selected by CSH for this program. Our selection was based in part on our successful participation in a project this board will remember well called Home Again, Project 25, a program that we administered through the United Way that has helped over 25 homeless individuals stabilize and secure their lives. So I think what this represents, Mr. Chairman, is some great progress with this organization in expanding our mission and also making sure that the real estate is here for people who need it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And that also reflects very well on the staff that we have in the organization and the hard work that they do to help put these projects together. Okay. I'd like to propose at this time an item to be moved to the consent calendar. I propose that item 103 be moved to the consent calendar.
So you're Mr. Chair, pursuant, as you've indicated before, pursuant to the provisions of the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953B2, all votes in this matter must be taken by a roll call vote. So at this point in time, commissioners will proceed with a roll call vote concerning the approval of item 103 as on the consent agenda. When your name is called, if you're in favor of approval, please say yes. If you're opposed, please say no. We'll commence now with the roll call.
No, we won't.
Cool.
No, because we don't have a second yet.
Cool.
Okay. My motion, I'm Gary Gramling. I made the motion. My motion has now been seconded by Commissioner Surdy. Is there any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the vote. Now, sir, you may do the roll call.
Thank you. Chair Grambling.
Yes.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
We have Commissioner Hubbard and Commissioner Moraga are not present. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
Commissioner Ertassen.
Yes.
The matter passed by a vote of 5-0 with Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga absent.
Thank you. Next comes the item approval of the minutes of the regularly scheduled meeting that was held on February 13th, 2015. Is there a motion? Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the minutes. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis has seconded the motion. Is there any discussion? Council? Okay. Commissioner Tussin is going to abstain because he wasn't present.
In accordance with the provisions of the Brown Act, we'll now proceed to a roll call vote concerning the minutes, item number 50. Chair Gramling.
Yes.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga are not present. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
And Commissioner Ertassen has indicated that he's abstaining. The matter passed by a vote of 4-0 with Commissioner Ertassen abstaining and Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga absent.
Thank you. Okay, at this time, I'm going to call item 100, fiscal year 2016, provision of interim housing for homeless adults. And we were going to have the staff presentation first.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could do a few preliminary remarks before the staff do the presentation.
Okay.
For nearly 30 years, 29 to be exact, the city of San Diego has provided temporary tents during the winter months for homeless San Diegans. On October the 7th last year, 2014, the San Diego City Council directed the San Diego Housing Commission staff to conduct a study of potential locations for a permanent indoor shelter that would replace the 350-bed tents by April the 1st. The motion was made by Councilmember Alvarez and seconded by Councilmember Sherman. At that time, none of us knew what service providers or facilities might emerge as possible solutions. However, an unexpected confluence of recent actions occurred, including homeless providers seeking to implement national best practices for addressing homelessness. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, one of the largest federal funders of homeless programs, has been strongly encouraging homeless providers to reexamine the use of transitional housing as the primary vehicle for the population who needs help, such as survivors of domestic violence, youth aging out of the foster care system, and individuals who need substance abuse treatment, because this type of housing utilizes more supportive services and participants can stay in this program for up to 2 years. Basically, in very general terms, there are three types of housing resources for homeless individuals, although there are an infinite number of subsets. There is what the federal government calls interim housing, and we here have traditionally called emergency housing, and we are changing our nomenclature to reflect federal practice. Interim is short term and reflects the way the tents have been used here for the last 29 years. Then there is transitional housing, and transitional is as it sounds, is to get people from one state to another. Typically, transitional housing has been in effect for up to a couple of years, although it's very fungible. And the transitional housing was with the expectation that it would allow individuals and families in need to stabilize their lives for permanent housing. The third category is permanent supportive housing, which is as it sounds, a more permanent residential situation. The federal government, HUD, has been roundly criticizing the city for 2 to 3 years or more that there was a relative imbalance in the supply of affordable housing for the homeless here in San Diego, relatively too much transitional, relatively too little permanent supportive, not enough numbers of housing for people to go to once they finish the transitional process. You get an in-and-out result. The local continuum of care and other local homeless providers have taken that admonition from HUD to heart, and there has begun to be a gradual transition so that more relative funding and resources are going into permanent supportive housing rather than transitional. The way this played out last year is that the facility at St. Vincent de Paul, which had a very strong program of transitional housing, shifted some of its resources from transitional housing to permanent supportive. We did not know that when the city gave me strong direction to go look for a permanent resource for the interim housing facility. So that when we put our own proposal on the street in December, we did not know that there were going to be any respondees at all. In fact, some of us were pretty skeptical. As it turned out, we did have one, and staff will do a presentation on that in a minute. But I think that what you can see is that as a result of this confluence of two events, both the Housing Commission going out looking for a permanent replacement for the winter tents, and one organization here looking to change its own program mix to reflect best practices nationally, we've wound up with what I think is a good set of solutions. I'm going to ask both Ms. Peterson and Ms. Peterman and Mr. Davis to do the staff presentation. We'd be glad to respond to questions as we go as well. And this reflects, I think, a very good response to the direction that the city council directed us on last October.
Mr. Davis, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. And in order to once again try to facilitate the movement of people who wish to speak, I'm going to call out the names of the first five speakers who will be coming from the lunchroom so that they can make their way over here. Hopefully they can hear me now, and I'm going to ask them to be very quiet and respectful of what your presentation as they come in and as they wait. But the first five speakers are going to be Marcos Aguilera, Carolina Hermanix, Michael Taylor, and I'm not sure I'm going to do this name justice, but I'll try. It looks as if it may be Ken Miser. He's in the lunchroom, so hopefully I've got the right name. And Edward Juarez. Those will be the first five speakers. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Gramling. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Davis, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at the Housing Commission. With me is Melissa Peterman. She is the Director of Homeless Housing Initiatives. As Mr. Gentry stated, on December 2nd, 2014, the Housing Commission issued at the direction and on behalf of the City of San Diego a request for proposal for a year-round permanent facility to provide interim housing and day center services to homeless adults. This was intended to replace the existing winter shelter tents, and the Neil Good Day Center programs. The RFP has been completed, negotiations have been conducted, and we are here today to request that you recommend for Housing Authority approval the 11 action items before you today. So I'll turn it over to Melissa to walk you through those action items.
Thank you, Jeff, and good morning, everyone. As mentioned before you today are 11 action items asking the Housing Commission to recommend the Housing Authority and City Council approve the award of two grants totaling $2,248,637 to St. Vincent de Paul Village for operation of the FY 2016 interim housing and day center facilities for homeless adults, to authorize the execution of agreements with St. Vincent's in the amount of $1,748,637 for the interim housing program at the Paul Mirabli Center in downtown San Diego, and $500,000 for the day center located at the Neil Good Day Center at 299 17th Street, also in downtown San Diego. Authorize four additional one-year renewal options for fiscal years 2017 to 2020 for each grant agreement, respectively, contingent upon the availability of funding, compliance with all grant agreement requirements, and program performance. To authorize the expenditure of $1,470,000 in city general funds, $808,602 in federal community development block grants, and $145,155 in federal emergency solutions grant funds as part of the Housing Commission's FY 2016 proposed budget. To recommend that the City Council find and declare the existence of a shelter crisis in the City of San Diego pursuant to and in accordance with the provisions of California Government Code Section 8698. Authorize the Housing Commission to expend up to $250,000 from city general funds in fiscal year 2015 for transition of the current St. Vincent beds to interim housing for the term of April 1st, 2015 through June 30th, 2015. Amend the Housing Authority approved Housing Commission FY 2015 budget to include an additional sum of $250,000 in city general funds. Authorize the Housing Commission President and CEO or designee to execute all documents and take all actions necessary to implement these approvals. And authorize the President and CEO to substitute funding sources or increase contract amounts by not more than 20% of the total contract amount for the proposed contracts if necessary. And as a note, on pages 3 and 10 of the report, it states increased compensation, which should state increased contract amount. Per a joint action of the Housing Authority and City Council on October 7, 2014, the Housing Commission was directed to conduct a programmatic study regarding possible locations for a permanent indoor shelter to be completed and were presented to the City Council prior to April 1, 2015. These recommendations were not to include the current 16th and Newton location of the city's single adult emergency winter shelter. Through an RFP, the Housing Commission announced that approximately $2.2 million was available to operate the city's interim housing and day center programs. During the RFP process, the Housing Commission advertised the opportunity through several channels, including newspapers, websites, and various community listservs. A total of 19 notifications were sent through ONVIA, our procurement notification system, resulting in 9 separate downloads of the RFP package. Additionally, a pre-proposal meeting was held on December 16, 2014, at which 8 agencies were in attendance. At the close of the RFP cycle, the Housing Commission received 2 proposals, one for each scope of work, requesting a total of $2.2 million. Both proposals were deemed responsive. A proposal evaluation committee was utilized to review the applications according to the criteria outlined in the RFP. The committee was comprised of Housing Commission and city staff. After careful consideration of the committee, it is their unanimous recommendation that St. Vincent de Paul Village be awarded the grants with the following conditions. For the interim housing program to be operated at the Paul Mirabli Center in downtown San Diego, St. Vincent de Paul Village will provide a comprehensive and collaborative homeless outreach plan targeted to a quarter-mile radius of the St. Vincent campus. Consistent communication to the East Village residents through community meetings and other effective forms of outreach. All services as proposed in the overall project will be provided, including leveraged resources, and a detailed transition plan for the facility to the interim housing program. For the day center, included in St. Vincent's proposal is use of a property located at 1402 Commercial Street, which is contiguous to the Paul Mirabli Center. The evaluation committee recommended the day center be located on the St. Vincent campus and that St. Vincent apply for a conditional use permit to move the day center to 1402 Commercial Street. However, after further consideration from staff, we are recommending the day center continue operations at the current Neil Good Day Center for at least fiscal year 2016 to determine if the CUP for the Commercial Street property can be obtained. During operations at the Neil Good site, showers will continue to be provided at the St. Vincent campus. Subsequently, St. Vincent will pursue the CUP with support from the Housing Commission needed to relocate the day center from the Neil Good Day Center to Commercial Street. If the CUP is approved, that aspect of the proposal will be the subject of a separate and later action item, but only upon subsequent approval by the appropriate entities. It is the Housing Commission's recommendation that this become the future site of the city's day center as it improves the amenities and service coordination for homeless individuals. And St. Vincent will provide assurance that any outdoor space used for the project is respectful of the neighboring community. For example, visibility must be limited from the street and no queuing will be allowed. St. Vincent de Paul Village is an experienced provider in our community. With over 65 years of service to San Diego, they have demonstrated their capacity to successfully operate day center programs, rapid rehousing, transitional housing, affordable housing, and permanent supportive housing. Each year, the agency serves at least 15,000 San Diegans in need. San Diego is at a tipping point in its provision of homeless services. The current need for housing for the homeless in our community outweighs the supply, which means we need to strategize ways to stretch the existing resources we have. One way to do so is through the creation of a centralized intake system, as it can help San Diego achieve its goal of getting the right intervention to those in need as quickly as possible. Selection of St. Vincent for operation of both the city's interim housing and day center programs streamline and enhance the effectiveness of the programs by uniting three previously disparate programs through operations by one agency, thereby creating a centralized access point in the city. St. Vincent's received approval from the Regional Continuum of Care Council Governance Board on October 2, 2014, and HUD on January 26, 2015, to reallocate the funds supporting its Palm Robles Center Transitional Housing Program to a Housing First Rapid Rehousing Program for homeless families. The 270 single men and 80 single women currently residing at the Palm Robles Center are being transferred to appropriate housing options, such as other transitional housing, permanent supportive, or permanent affordable housing. This shift in HUD funding, along with the city's realignment of funds supporting the winter shelter programs, allows for the opportunity to transition from temporary tents to the proposed year-round interim housing within a permanent structure. As part of the transition to interim housing at St. Vincent's, it is anticipated that 100 beds will be available on April 1, 2015, with all 350 beds operating as interim housing by June 30, 2015. The Housing Commission proposes to enter into an agreement with St. Vincent's for $250,000 in FY 2015 City General Funds to support the changeover of the beds during that three-month term. Even with the conversion of St. Vincent's to interim housing, there is still a need for shelter in San Diego. On a nightly basis, approximately 2,468 people are unsheltered in the city. Without a safe, stable place to escape the elements, these individuals are left vulnerable to risks for health, safety, and welfare-related consequences associated with living outside. Currently, our community does not have enough beds to fully meet the shelter need within the city. As a result, a shelter crisis can be declared since a significant number of persons are without the ability to obtain shelter, resulting in a threat to their health and safety. By doing so, the city is better able to address the shelter needs of the homeless population through such programs as the city's interim housing program. Recommended for location at the St. Vincent campus in the East Village neighborhood of downtown San Diego, the interim housing will be operated by St. Vincent in partnership with PATH and Veterans Village of San Diego. St. Vincent's will manage the 350-bed short-term housing program, which provides shelter, daily meals, and supportive services for homeless individuals. Through the Downtown San Diego Coordinated Assessment and Housing Placement System, the interim housing will provide client-appropriate housing and enhanced services to as many as 2,835 homeless single adults over the 12-month operating term. This number exceeds the minimum 800 individuals served annually by the emergency winter tents. To reinforce the importance of moving out of homelessness and into more permanent housing, the goal will be 45-day lengths of stay for residents, Additionally, we will carve out 140 beds for veterans and 50 beds to be utilized by the San Diego Police Department homeless outreach team for triage and housing placement. By incorporating the interim housing into the downtown coordinated assessment system, we are better aligning available resources within the community and targeting those most in need of assistance. Additionally, with 40% of the beds set aside for veterans, the interim housing program will assist in the federal goal of ending veteran homelessness in San Diego by 2015. Furthermore, relocation of the interim housing to St. Vincent de Paul Village will result in access to the following new services for residents: assessment center services, a computer lab, resource room, adult education classrooms, and access to an on-site medical clinic. Since many overnight emergency shelters and transitional housing programs are usually closed during the day, the city's day center program is an essential component of the community's continuum of care. It provides a safe, comfortable drop-in center for homeless adults with access to basic hygiene facilities and shelter from the elements during the day. We are recommending the day center operate at the Neil Good Day Center located at 299 17th Street, with the exception of showers, until such time as the program can be moved to the St. Vincent campus. Over the contract term, at least 3,500 individuals are projected to be served. Proposed funding and uses approved by this action are included in the Housing Commission's proposed FY 2016 budget, which is planned to be presented for approval at a June Housing Authority meeting. Approving this action will authorize the Commission to expend $2,423,757, subject to Housing Authority approval, in FY 2016. These totals include contract consultant funds to St. Vincent de Paul Village, as well as Housing Commission administrative costs. These are outlined in slide number 14 and in the report on page 10. The proposed FY 2015 funding approved by this action is not included in the Housing Commission's FY 2015 budget, but is confirmed as available by the city with its FY 2015 general fund budget. Approving this action will amend the FY 2015 budget by $250,000 from the city's general fund and authorize the Housing Commission to expend the $250,000 in addition to the Housing Commission's FY 15 budget. I would like to note a typographical error in the report on page 10. Column 7, row 8 should include the $250,000 total. It has been corrected on the slide before you. Funding sources approved by this action total $2,673,757 and will be as follows: $250,000 in FY15 City of San Diego General Funds, $1,470,000 in FY16 City of San Diego General Funds, $145,155 in FY16 Emergency Solutions Grant Funds, and $808,602 in Community Development Block Grant Funds. If approved, initial operation of the interim housing would be effective April 1st, 2015. As such, approval of the recommended actions would allow the Housing Commission time to begin executing contracts with the operator. That concludes my report. I appreciate your time. Both Bill Bolstad, Vice President of Capital Development, and Ruth Bruland, Executive Director of St. Vincent de Paul Village, are here to help answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gentry, you had something you wanted to add?
One other comment, to show the broad range of people who've been working on this. Although this initiative was at the specific direction of City Council in a unanimous vote, on October the 7th last year, we've worked hand in glove with Mayor Faulkner's office as well. In fact, the mayor presided at the announcement of the request for proposal release in December of last year. His staff were involved with us as we reviewed and negotiated on this proposal, and we've had indications that the mayor strongly supports this as well. And I cannot give too much credit toward his office in this effort. So I think this reflects City Hall, not only the council, but the mayor's office as well.
Thank you. I want to apologize to the people who are standing there. Too bad we don't have chairs here so that, you know, but I do apologize for having you stand as long. We have one more process to go through before we start calling on you. Members of the commission, do any of you have any questions of staff or questions that if the staff can't answer, members of St. Vincent's can? Ms. Spoon?
My name is Roberta Spoon. I'm a commissioner. I would like to know what caused the concept of combining the Neil Good Day Center with the interim housing project. I mean, what initially caused you to make that decision that would be beneficial?
The short answer is your CEO, Rick Gentry. This was my idea, and this was put into the RFP as an alternate. It was not a requirement, and we were very ready to award the interim facility without the day center itself. The issue is that the structure that the Neil Good Day Center operation is in pretty dire condition. And if anybody's seen it lately, no one would object to that notion. This is a structure owned by Caltrans. The city doesn't even own it. The city has leased it at no cost for a number of years, I think about 25 years there as well. The structure's showers we had to shut down a little over a year ago, so that anyone who was there taking advantage of the daily services there would have to go to St. Vincent's anyway to get a shower. And there is no money budgeted to rehab a facility that the city does not own in the first place. Also, with the continuing efforts at coordination and intake services among the homeless, so that we're not just warehousing them, that we are helping them to identify opportunities for permanent housing, it made sense to me to put an alternate in here to see if we could combine the two. The St. Vincent's facility with an amended CUP would fill that bill. Without the CUP, they can't do it. However, they've indicated a willingness to go through a CUP amendment process with the city, which I would support and we would support, assuming that this proposal is adopted by you all and by the city council next week. And in the meantime, to coordinate services, that St. Vincent's would operate the day center in its current location to provide for an orderly transition whenever the CUP is approved, assuming it is. I'll point out as well that in the past, St. Vincent's has operated the day center itself.
Commissioner Spoon?
Well, Mr. Gentry, it seems to me, though, there will be capital costs that will be incurred to create a new day center on Commercial, whether that be this year or in the next fiscal year. So what are your thoughts on that?
This might be an appropriate time to ask either Bishop Vargas or Bill Bolstad from St. Vincent's to talk about how they would see accommodating the day center if this were to go forward, if I could so ask.
I think you've given a promotion to Deacon Vargas, but...
What did I say?
You said Bishop.
Well, I'm a former Southern Baptist, so I'm sorry. To me, a deacon is a Baptist. I've learned what that is just in this process lately. Sorry, okay. Deacon.
Okay, so do one of you wish to come up here and address that question?
Good morning. So I believe the question is about capital expenses that would be incurred to operate the day center at the 1402 Commercial site. Is that correct?
Not to operate.
To prepare the building to operate. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if it's clear that the property there has a building on it. There was a photo in the presentation that Melissa provided here, and that that space has been rehabbed and with really minimal changes would be ready to go.
To operate as a day center?
Yes.
And to handle the volume?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Can I, as long as you're there,
sure.
Can you explain the experience that St. Vincent's has in operating a day center? I don't have a recollection of when St. Vincent's did operate it.
Sure. You know, I'm wondering if it would be acceptable to the commission here. We have Ruth Bruin, who's our executive director, and she was involved in running that. If it would be okay, I'd like to have her respond to that.
We operated Neil Good Day Center for a two-year period. I believe it was 2008 to 2010. Might be 1 year off in that time frame. While we operated it, we did maintain use of our shower facility at St. Vincent's because it allows us to have higher volume than what the showers at the Neil Good Day Center allow. We also at St. Vincent's have a state certified outpatient treatment program. So we took one of the classes of that program and moved it up to the day center. So there was an introductory opportunity for people who were contemplating maybe changing their drug and alcohol usage. And then we also built some cubicles within that space that I believe Alpha Project has maintained that allowed for an influx of other providers to come and offer their services to the Neil Good Day Center. So it's been long enough. I'm sorry I should have reviewed the usage at that point, but I am quite confident that there wasn't a drop at all in the accessing of the services, and in fact there was maybe a slight increase within that.
And what caused you to stop operating it?
At that point, Father Joe was still our CEO, and I think there was some contract negotiations. There were some issues with the building that we saw as being real stumbling blocks to do all that needed to be done. So a decision was made on Father Joe's part to withdraw St. Vincent's from the opportunity to operate it for another year.
In our staff report, it shows that it'll cost, I guess, about $976,000 to operate it, and it has the staff report has a comment that there would be matching funds by St. Vincent's. Is that new money that you will need to raise to operate the day center?
There is a little new money within that, but under, I think it's closer to $50,000 rather than that large amount. We would actually move some of our services into that building. So things that are currently happening in the Joan Kroc Center, we would move to either the Neil Good Day Center, or we call it the Penske property because it used to be the old Penske lot. So we would move those services to that site, thereby being able to augment what's offered, but not increase our costs. Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Possibly.
I'd like
Commissioner Spoon?
I'd like to hear more about the relocation of the current residents. The staff report, you made a comment being transferred. Well, I would like to hear the details of that.
Clarification. Are we talking about the transfer of people at the day center or at the, okay.
Sorry about that. I'm Ruth Bruland, Executive Director. I know that there has been some conversation with that, so I'm going to start the discussion, and perhaps then Bill will have something to add. That facility, the 350 beds, prior to us submitting this RFP, had and what we did with our HUD funding, had served as transitional housing, so all the residents within it were part of a transitional housing program. When we determined that we wanted to and needed to, for the sake of the community, repurpose those dollars and instead have it go to a Housing First effort, we then began the process of transferring those clients to our transitional housing program that is in the Joan Kroc Center and the Bishop Maher Center. So that was the first part of the process. We still have about 20 residents that are in the Paul Mirabli Center that are in that transitional housing program, so they still need to relocate to the other locations. We also then were asked by the 25 Cities campaign that is part of that movement to end chronic homelessness within the deadline that the federal government has set. They asked us if we would close our wait list so we could start accumulating some beds for them to use in the process of finding the most vulnerable chronically homeless individuals so we could get them off the street quickly.
because what they had discovered was that they would engage with a person on the street, and then in the process of trying to get paperwork together, make sure the right questions were asked and answered, they'd lose track of them. They couldn't find them. So they asked if we could please open up some beds. So we actually stopped our wait list and kept it closed until we had 100 beds open for that purpose. And so the 25 cities has maintained a rotation of clients through the Palmer Obley Center to augment that effort. We also knew within this proposal that the hot team beds, which are currently 25 in the Palmer Obley Center, we're going to increase to 50 beds, and that is an excellent use of our beds, and so we have been very protective of that amount of space as well. So we would be ready with the hot team to hit the ground running on what that offers. So currently within the Palmer Obley Center, most of the current residents, apart from those 20 that need to go to our facility, other transitional housing facilities, are engaged in waiting for permanent supportive housing, rapid rehousing, where they'll get some short-term rental assistance, or are in strict emergency use, where their scores, according to the vulnerability index, are such that they don't need a lot of support. We anticipate that will shift a little bit once we launch into this interim housing use, but things will keep moving along, so we'll be ready.
So in total, I'm an accountant, so bear with me here.
Yeah.
In total, how many people are in the Mirabli Center right now?
Currently, we have about 270 people. And so we've got 80 beds that are open right now, and we're in conversation with the operators of the Veterans Tent and the Cold Weather Tent, so VVSD and Alpha Project, and are working with them to receive those clients that are, again, working with housing navigators that we would be at risk as a community of losing track of them. So those beds will be utilized by those exits from the Cold Weather Tents.
And there are currently 350 people in the two tents, is that right?
Correct.
So we have to move 350 people into the Mirabli Center?
If I could add a note here. Technically, the funding for the tents and the tents this year shut down altogether April the 1st. So absent a change, they're all going to be on the street with no nighttime shelter April the 1st. The new contracts technically pick up July the 1st, so there's a gap. At the same time, my understanding is that the previous transitional funding ends April the 30th.
Correct.
For the Mirabli Center.
Correct.
So there's a two-month gap there, three-month gap here. Mayor Faulkner, God bless him, has filled the difference by allocating $250,000 in fiscal year 15 surplus money from the city to cover that difference between April the 1st and July the 1st so that if this is approved, St. Vincent's can gradually ramp up from about 100 beds they estimate April the 1st to the full 350 July the 1st. So this is a gradual ramping up rather than a shutdown of people on the street entirely April the 1st and then a fill back up, on July the 1st, if that makes sense.
And we're using the system that HUD is mandating, that all the communities, HUD, continuum of cares that are funded by HUD, that they start utilizing. St. Vincent's has been using that tool, that scores the vulnerability of people and then also suggests an appropriate intervention. We have been using that tool now for several months. The tents have as well, and so it's a very targeted inreach into that tent system to move the appropriate people according to that system approved by HUD into the Palmer Obley Center.
So it seems, without the addition of new beds, obviously there will be a gradual release of people to the street, the 270 that you currently have in the Mirabli Center.
The goal is not to the street, so that too was a targeted bring into the system. Mm-hmm. with that that must mean that I should be done. It was based on the vulnerability index score and the intervention. The massive task within this is to match that client need with the intervention. And I agree completely with Rick that this is a very good combination of uses, in that we have to grow that coordinated system in order to have better communication between agents. It's really wanting me to stop, that have interventions. And so it's going to be a lot of pressure. I'll buy a thing of Rolaids over this, but it's going to happen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Before you sit down. So what you've said and what I understand is that the intake process for these people as the beds become available is essentially going to be the same intake process, the questionnaires and everything else, right, that has been currently used at the tents this winter,
right,
by both tents.
Right, right.
So theoretically, at least, the same people as beds are available could come back into the system that you're offering through, assuming this is approved.
Yes. Yeah, the vulnerability index is a bit like a credit score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can change. So, you know, if somebody fills it out, they might score as having no need and then walk across the street, a car hits them. You know, things can change dramatically. So it is absolutely the fact that someone who's leaving the tent with a vulnerability score that indicates that they don't need anything in order to overcome their homelessness, that could change on a dime. And so it's absolutely true. If I may add, this is a major shift for St. Vincent's. Our wait list has always been first come, first serve. And we agree with the community that we can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. And so this is a dramatic change for us that is an all-in investment in a more efficient and effective way to try and help people to get out of their homelessness.
And those people that have currently been in your program, who are weeding down, you said there's only 20 remaining under the program that is closing.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal of your team then has been to place all of those people into facilities elsewhere within the city. Is that correct?
Correct. They are currently being served by case managers in the Paul Mirabli Center. So our multidisciplinary teams, our goal, however, is once a bed opens in our existing transitional housing programs, we'll move them across the street to get those 20 beds open as soon as possible.
Thank you. Commissioner Spillane,
do you might want to add staff to add these two new operations? Apparently.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a big addition for your group.
We worked very carefully within the money that was allowed, so we have added 8 FTE of housing navigator to the Paul Mirabli Center process, and that's the Connections Housing and VVSD, and we're hoping that we can bring more partners in within the housing navigators. We don't think it's the most effective thing to do it all ourselves. We want to spread it through the community. And then for the Neil Good Day Center, we put within the budget additional assessment staff, such as our commitment to do the vulnerability index and the other placement tools that assist. So we did some really targeted additions of staff.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Staff, do you have anything else to add at this moment? Commissioner Spoon has another question. Of course. And that is, of course, you may.
There's also included in this the request for the approval of a shelter crisis designation, and your request suggests that we eliminate safety and health codes because of that crisis. So would someone expand on that? To me, that just doesn't sound like that's something we should be doing, but can you explain it?
I think council wants to address that.
If I might, for the last 3 or 4 years, the city council has made this declaration based upon the fact that there are so many people living on the streets that are subject to are in very bad condition and need to be aided. The state legislature provided about 15 years ago this code section to allow for temporary relaxation of certain code provisions. It's in accordance with state law. The idea is that not to get bound up into bureaucracy and trying to fix the situation. So the city council has the ability to make that designation based upon the facts that have been submitted. In fact, there would be no jeopardy to any persons as a result of this, but to the extent there's a technical problem or bureaucracy that would need to be followed to do something, they allow the city to make the declaration and allow the operators within the city to go forward. It's important to note that the declaration deals with public facilities. So those are facilities that are owned by a public entity or subject to lease by a public entity that would not have any effect on the St. Vincent's. They already have obtained conditional use permits to do all of this, and they're within the current laws. This is a more broad-reaching approval. In case the city needs to, or the commission needs to do something else, we'll have the authority to do that.
All right. We're going to go ahead and start with our speaker request forms. And when you give your talk, any member of the commission, if they wish, when you've completed your talk, may choose to ask you a question, or they may choose not to ask you any question. Don't take anything seriously by the absence of questions after you've completed your talk, okay? All right, so I'm trying. Okay. So our first speaker is Marcos Avalera. Is that correct? Sure. Okay. Carolina Harmonics. Now you get a chance. And I need to remind you again that everyone's getting 1 minute. Introduce yourself again.
Once again, I am still Carolina C. Hermanics, and I represent the voices of 280 people and 267 people respectively who are directly impacted by this policy and had no knowledge of how this was working. We're not saying that St. Vincent should not be funded. We are saying that St. Vincent should not be the be-all and end-all of homeless services in the city of San Diego. Alpha Project has operated the Winter Shelter and the city of San Diego's Neil Goodday Center. It has been a project. People need options. Some people will not have a one-size-fits-all experience at St. Vinny's that's going to be positive to them and end homelessness. And honestly, like I said, God bless St. Vinny's, but I just don't believe that you're going to deliver on that you're going to be able to do it. Thank you. Any questions?
If you have the petitions, feel free to give the petitions to Angie over here in the corner.
Will do. And once again, they state Keep Alpha Project Winter Shelter and the Veterans Tent open, funded and staffed by Alpha Project and Veterans Village San Diego staff. And the other petition said keep the City of San Diego's Neil Goodday Center open, properly funded, and run by Alpha Project staff. That's all I have.
Thank you
for your kind attention.
Michael Taylor.
My name is Michael Taylor, and I'm in the tent right now with Alpha Project. I'm just asking, please don't close it. You know, it's just me and my son, and we came for help, and they're helping us. But after April 1st, I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. Nobody's telling us nothing. But I'm just asking, please don't close it down. You know what I mean? They helped me, you know, to deal with my son, help me. My son is just me and him. He's 2 years old. Please don't close it down. That's all I'm asking. You know, I usually, I work. It's just been hard for me because of my disabilities. but I'm not giving up. I'm definitely not going to give up on my son. So please don't close it. You know, Alpha Project was supposed to be a community. You know, if Vince is going to help, St. Vinny's going to help, you know, why not help Alpha Project too? You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker is Kevin Williams. Sorry for butchering your name.
Kevin Wilson, no problem. Thank you very much for talking to me and hearing me out. As you know, we are all part of the Alpha Project. We are all staying there. As our homelessness happened, we called the St. Vinny's to turn in to take us in. They not only turned down my mother, who is disabled, but my wife, who is pregnant, with me. Alpha Project brought us in. They not only took us in, but they made sure that there was transportation to and from the hospital for my mother to make sure she was able to take care of her stuff. The Alpha Project has done nothing but help people out. If you guys close them down, I am letting you know now, St. Vinny's will not be able to handle the people. You will have more homeless on the street, and you guys better be prepared for this. And I will tell you now, as a person who is on the street, you guys do not do your job correctly. I will make sure each and every one of you lose your job and get into have new housing people up here to do this for us properly. St. Vinny's is not an organization to help us. And I'm letting you know this now. Alpha Project has done nothing but helped everybody there. St. Vinny's will turn people away and put them back on the streets. Alpha Project up over here, Bob, who's back here in the corner, has done nothing but helped every single person out in that tent. You guys close that tent. That is the biggest mistake you guys will ever do. Biggest mistake. Thank you.
Thank you. Edward Juarez.
Hi, my name's Edward Juarez, and I also currently reside inside the tent. I believe that I've also tried to pull, through experience, try to apply at St. Vincent de Paul. I believe that the so many hoops that you have to go through in order to try and get into that program is going to cause the percentage, the large percentage of the people that are in the tent right now just to remain on the streets instead of trying to go through all the hoops, all the loops that you have to go through to try and get into St. Vincent de Paul. Not unless they change the way that they do their entry program, but as far as I can see, it's going to remain the same. So if you close down the tent, not only will you be having much more homeless project where you're currently building your multi-million-dollar buildings and have much more of the residents that are buying those buildings complaining over the homeless people, but you'll also have people losing jobs, which is the Alpha Project. So I really hope that you reconsider refunding the tents until, you know, you can either find a more sufficient way to get rid of this problem.
5 seconds.
5 seconds. And, you know, I'm just asking that you also keep it open until we can find a more suitable place to where we can apply for our homelessness problems. But thank you very much, and thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you, Mr. Juarez.
Thank you.
I'm going to call the next five people so they can start coming from the lunchroom while we're listening to Mr. Aguilera with his talk. So I'm calling forward Steve Pendergast, Eileen McNabb, and Veronica Loving. I realize that's only three, but that's the number that we still have left out back in the lunchroom who have asked to speak. Marcos, two other speakers have given you their time. So instead of 1 minute, you have 3 minutes, and they're not going to talk.
Excellent.
Okay. So, Council, if you'll... Okay, thank you.
Chair Gromlin, Commissioners, thank you for letting me address this. I'm going to detract here because of the previous speakers here, and let me say that I first was one of the most outspoken people against the emergency tents. I'm Marcos Aguilera. I'm the Barrio Logan Association Chairman. I'm a Barrio Logan Association resident, and I'm also a business owner in San Diego. I love this city. I couldn't stand Alpha Project 2 or 3 years ago. And then I started going into the tents. I started actually seeing the people, seeing what happened, meeting these people, hearing their cases, and actually starting to track down case managers and seeing where they were going, what they were doing. I think Commissioner Spoon hit it right in the head when she started questioning some of these numbers. With that, I will say I fully support, as a Barrio Logan resident, extending the tents, those, to keep them open. Here's why. We understand the Housing First model. We do. Who are we? We're the Barrio Logan Association, the East Village Residents Group, East Village BID, et cetera, et cetera. We also have some private funding to bring to the table here. We understand the Housing First model, the paradigm shift that you need to move funds away from transitional housing. Sat down with your one of the regional continuum care czars. He gave me a really good speech. A very smart gentleman. I appreciate his time. We understand you need to shift to permanent supportive housing. We understand the funding hit that Father Joe's had to take of approximately $1.7 million. We understand that that number is very close to the $1.6 million in change that you would be approving to keep for the emergency funding to go towards Father Joe's. And the Neil Good Day, which could be subject to the CUP. We take issue with how restrictive the RFP was. Why was this not sole sourced? It was such written so restrictive that only one organization could truly do it. If you get in the numbers, if you have to be a 501c3 for 2 years locating within the city of San Diego, owning the property, being able to do all these services, it is very clear and not transparent. It shouldn't have been an RFP. It should have been a sole source if the city was that, and the mayor's office was that strongly for it. We also understand the 25 Cities Initiative. And as I heard from a Housing Commission employee on a different subject that led off this meeting, the numbers don't add up. 270 plus 80 is what Paul Mirabel currently has. That's 350. 200 approximately at Barrio, 150 at Midway. With a shift towards rapid rehousing, that's going to be the and more housing navigators. That's the theoretical premise of which you're going to approve this.
10 seconds.
With that, I will close with saying that give us more time. Give us 30 to 60 days to give you a proposal. Keep the tents open. Use that funding, that $250,000 Mayor Faulkner found, and give us more time to give you a proper proposal. Do not approve this. Do not send us to City Council with a positive endorsement.
Thank you. Mr. Pendergast?
Thank you. In contrast to a previous speaker, I really hope you don't lose your jobs. You'd be homeless and you'd hate it. Okay.
Just so that you'll know, none of the commissioners get paid for their time here.
Oh, really?
No, we're volunteers.
That's fantastic.
Okay. So I won't lose my home if I'm kicked off the commission.
Okay.
Well, I didn't want you to have a sleepless night. That's all.
I've had many, but here is, of course, I want to say, please keep the tent open. I myself need 6 more weeks before I can go back into St. Vinny's. And then we have a plan, third time's the charm, to get the disability that I need. Real briefly, communication. There is a lack of communication here between the various case managers. Intelligence sharing. I heard you saying that they're going to start doing that. That's good, because they haven't been doing it very well. The homeless person, here's what you say.
10 seconds.
But they don't tell us everything explicitly. They stay insular in their nomenclature. They're not communicating well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Eileen McNabb.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to say please keep our tents and our Neil Good Day Center open. It's a place for us that don't fit in anywhere else, as well as keep their staff and their facilitator, Bob. It's, you know, keep real people with real people. I'm just going to keep it short.
Thank you. And Veronica Loving?
Hi, good morning, Council. My name is Veronica Loving, and I just want to say that I'm so in favor of keeping the tent open and the No Good Day Center run by Alpha Project. Alpha Project has helped me so much on my way. God, when I was homeless living under a bridge, St. Vincent's turned me down so many times. If it wasn't for Alpha Project taking me into the tent, first of all, Neil Good Day Center, I was able to finish college, get a degree in social behavioral science, get clean and sober. I've been that way now inside for 7 years because of Alpha Project. I don't know what I would have done if it wasn't for them during a domestic violence situation. They let me into the tent and I was able to get on my feet, and from then they placed me into the metro. And now, you know, I've got a chance in life. At that time, I was on drugs and homeless, and I had no chance when I saw no hope. I was there when St. Vincent took over the Mill Project Day Center a while ago, and there was not that compassion and love that I felt with Alpha Project. And I'm a miracle because of Alpha Project. Thank you.
Thank you. The rest of the requests in opposition to this are apparently in the room, so I'll just call them one at a time. Pamela Cooks, please step forward.
Good morning. I'm currently a resident of the Alpha Project.
Please state your name.
Pamela Cooks, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm currently a resident of the Alpha Project Gwinnett Shelter. I've been there since December. As you can tell, a lot of us are very passionate about the Alpha Project. I've been married 28 years. My husband's here with me. I stand here addressing you with stage 4 ovarian cancer. I take 58 pills a day, 9 shots of insulin, and twice a week I get chemotherapy. What happens to me? April 1st. I scored an 8 on my SPADAT. My husband scored a 3. We would be separated trying to get into, if I'm one of the lucky ones trying to get into Vinny's, will they take my husband as well? I'm not knocking Vinny's, but the thing about it is, don't cut the programs in place just so that they can have the whole thing. I don't know where I would be without the Alpha Project. Like I said, a lot of us there are very passionate.
10 seconds.
Alpha Project is our home. They took us in. Just consider keeping it open. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Arnold.
Good morning, Commissioners, and I really appreciate Commissioner Spoon asking some very tough questions because they need to be answered. I'm in the tent, but I'm going to come from a different perspective.
You need to tell us your name.
Kevin Arnold, and I'm living in tent. I'm going to come from a different perspective. The Alpha Project needs to have a plan. A plan is not just to house people, but it's a plan to get them out of homelessness. There have been times when they've scheduled navigators to come and meet with us, they didn't even show up. There have been times when I have a job and I met with them and they would send me to places that I told them that's not what I want, and they just left me out there hanging. The issue that I'm probably going to have with St. Vincent's is, if you're going to move all these people from Alpha Project, will you have enough space to house them? Because if you don't, you're going to have people on the street. You cannot move 200 people into 80 spaces. These are issues that need to be addressed. I applied to St. Vincent's. They told me that I would have to wait 4 weeks. I'm account manager at my job, so I'm doing pretty well. So, but the issue that this commission must decide is that, what kind of plan does Alpha Project has? What kind of plan do you have, guys have? How are y'all going to address this homeless problem? You can't just move people and not have a plan to move them to better housing. I went before the city council this week. Commissioner Later, I think she was she's the president of city council. She was astonished.
5 seconds.
On what was going on at Alpha Project. So as a result, they have scheduled a public hearing for the 24th to listen to the residents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Joan, I apologize. Joan, last name is Wojcik? Okay. I've never called you by your last name, so that's why.
I know you haven't. It's a hard one. I understand. Dear board members, my name is Joan Wojcik. I am the president of the East Village Residents Group. The EVRG requested that the RFP be rewritten to include a large inventory of rapid rehousing to ensure the success of this plan. The proposal states every 45 days, 350 homeless will be transitioned out of the permanent homeless shelter and place, but lacks the details in addressing the placement. In order for the program, as outlined in the news release I read, the Housing Commission should have access for approximately 2,800 permanent beds. To date, I am unaware of the accurate estimate in that number. I'll skip down. We also are recommending that you consider a different site. And however,
your time is up.
Oh my goodness. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before I call the last speaker in opposition, I'm going to let the lunchroom know that the first four speakers speaking in favor of are being called forward. That's going to be William Beeman, Ron Vernetti, Edward Pelsner, and Jenna Brosman. If you're still in the lunchroom, would you please come forward? The last speaker request I have in opposition is from Victor Lynn Barber, Jr. Sir? What's your name? I'll look for it while this gentleman is talking.
Thank you for giving me this chance, Board. I'm Victor Lynn Barber, Jr. I was born and raised in this city. I'm a San Diego native. I come from San Diego Navy Hospital. I was born there. My father is ex-Navy, Admiral. My family's still in the Navy. I did not join. I have my reasons. But I've been working here and living in this city my whole life. I went to school here. I've seen a lot of things. I wasn't afforded to any of the stuff that happened. I hit rough times. I went to St. Vinny's on October 1st or 5th, and they denied me to get in. I heard about the Alpha Project. I went over there, filled out the survey. I lived with my parents. My parents worked for the San Diego City of San Diego. They also work for the county now because they're both retired. My thing is I had nothing when I got there. I came in to the Alpha Project. They're the only ones who would take me because of my establishment and my family.
10 seconds.
So I'm begging you guys, don't take away my home. I currently work at Home Depot. If you guys take away, I have nowhere to go. Thank you.
Thank you. So I haven't found your request, but Angie is bringing one over. Did you also fill one out earlier?
Here's the Alpha Project.
Did you?
Yeah. My name's George King.
Okay, I don't have yours either then. But Miss Rosati Rios will give you a form, and we'll go ahead and let you have a chance. Who are you, sir?
My name is William Beeman.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and let you speak, and then we'll probably interrupt the...
Sound like a winner?
Well, I'm letting the others know. Okay? So I'm going to let the first speaker speak in favor of, so that we can keep the time flow going, while these other two gentlemen are filling out their forms to speak against. And then I'll bring back those. Okay. Mr. Beeman, please step forward. State your name into the microphone.
My name is William Beeman. I oppose everything that they've been talking about. And I'm for everything that they did talk about, which means I'm not on the street. I have a place to stay. The government gave me a place to stay, which I don't have to pay no rent. I can dress as I want to, sleep as I want to, and, you know, do the things that you guys do as I want to. And it's free. But my point is, why I'm here, is that I like a new proposal to come up. The MAC Project. MAC Project, back in 78, was a great project. That came from Alabama.
10 seconds.
Alabama was a place where it's cold, where Governor George C. Wallace was at. You know how he is. You know how he was. You know, he disappointed.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I'm not on the street. Take care now.
Thank you. I'm going to call one more while we're getting these forms filled out. Mr. Vernetti, please step forward, state your name into the microphone.
Ron Vernetti. I'm a member of the board of St. Vincent de Paul. And St. Vincent's is not one size fits all. Your adoption of this recommendation will not only provide beds and meals for people, but also enable those coming from the Alpha Project to receive services that they now do not receive. Medical services, dental, psychiatric, education and training, how to fill out a resume, how to interview for a job, and drug and alcohol rehab. And people need these services. If they're going to get out of homelessness, and we all hope that they do, these barriers have to be broken down to accomplish that. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Gibson, please step forward, and when you get to the microphone, state your name, and then proceed.
Good morning. My name is George Gibson. If Alpha Project is closed down, I'll probably end up back in prison. I've been in and out of institutions now for the last 40 years, and the first place that ever helped me was Alpha Project. And without them, I'd probably be back in prison dead because of my health. And the shelter is supposed to be closing within 2 weeks, and I don't know where I'm going to be, but I'm tired of going back to jail. Program needs to stay open. And if you guys close that program down, I'll probably die out here. And it's not fair to people that have to go through that. And I'm tired of getting myself in trouble and binds because of my homeless problem. And if you guys close that program down, there's going to be a lot of people in trouble. And I'm one of them. And I finally discharged our parole. I ain't never been off parole since I was 12 years old. And I finally discharged our parole. But if anything happens, I'll probably be back in jail because I can't sleep out there on the streets because my health won't allow me.
Thank you, sir. Mr. King?
My name's George King. I'm resident of the tent. I opposing St. Vincent Paul taking over because I had 6 strokes, 2 heart attacks, and I was put in the tent in Cannonworth. And by closing the tent in April, you will put my health back in risk, and I will probably have a stroke or a seizure. And I want the tent, the Alpha Project, to keep running. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Going back to those in favor, Mr. Pelsner.
Thank you. I was a little unclear on, you know, the process of determining, you know, who was in favor and who was against, and I apologize for that. My position is that I'm a resident at the tent, and I certainly feel that that has been a tremendous help for me. You know, one of the big things about that is the way that what happens within the tent is it's a lot more than just a shelter. It's the way that people act around people, not only amongst clients, but from clients to staff. And there's a peer assimilation there that seems to be very informative, very helpful in terms of people feeling better about themselves and about how to help one another. If you've been involved with something that you shouldn't have, that comes out through your peers, and I can't think of a better way to address that type of
10 seconds.
That type of issue. And I haven't been out on the streets long, but what I have seen is that Alpha seems to have a fantastic way to handle it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gibson, just so that you'll know, I found your form. It was on the wrong color. So, but we weren't trying to keep you from speaking. So. Okay, Jenna Brosman on behalf of Mildred Morrell. Is that correct? You're right, McConnell.
Good morning. My name is Jenna Brosman. I'm here on behalf of Michael McConnell, who is the regional team leader of the 25 Cities Initiative to End Veteran and Chronic Homelessness. These are his words. Today I'm speaking and supporting this project as an East Village resident and San Diego business owner. For decades, the city of San Diego has battled the issue of homelessness with temporary solutions such as emergency shelter tents and transitional housing without much success. Recently, under the leadership of Mayor Faulkner, Councilmember Todd Gloria, and San Diego Housing Commission President CEO Richard Gentry, the city has begun to take an aggressive outcomes-focused approach to solving homelessness. As a part of San Diego's homeless service system transformation, St. Vincent de Paul reallocated approximately $650,000 in federal grants from transitional housing to the more effective rapid rehousing model. In addition, San Diego is receiving approximately $5 million in rapid rehousing for veterans and over $1 million in COC, ESG, and CalWORKs rapid rehousing in 2015. Changing high-cost transitional housing to emergency shelter is a crucial part of the right-sizing our system and forming a client-centered approach to solving homelessness in San Diego. I urge the San Diego Housing Commission Board to approve this proposal and set us on path to solving homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Frank Helsel.
Good morning. My name is Frank Helsel. I represent the Satterberg Foundation, which is located in Seattle, Washington. Satterberg's mission is to promote a just society and a sustainable environment. In light of that, St. Vincent de Paul fits our mission so well that we have funded them with grants since 2012 in support for their housing services, capacity building, and agency policy and advocacy efforts. From our standpoint at Satterberg, St. Vincent de Paul Village is engaging in work that is important to this community, and it's what we expect. Real and sustained systems change aimed at ending homelessness in San Diego. St. Vincent's proposal to operate a year-round interim shelter and a day center is a great example of this focus on systems change. So this policy that is before you, Satterberg has no doubt that they can carry it out.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Michelle McElroy?
Michelle McElroy, I'm a resident of San Diego. I'm here today to support St. Vincent's application. I'm a successful graduate of Vinny's. When I was homeless, I saw a lot of people who just hung out because they didn't know how to get off the streets. These two programs provide structures for people to get work, leaving the drugs and alcohol behind, and instead of getting leaving it behind instead of getting their own place. Some people are just going to need the PMC to use the computer labs to get going, other resources that it has to offer, schooling, education, trade programs, culinary, guard card, service certificates, just everything, dental, medical, you know, that's why I'm smiling. Others need more than the Neil Good Day Center. You can help them out, and it's a start. It's a start. Thank you.
Thank you. Marsha Weld? Did I say that correctly? Marsha Weld? Welch? Oh, you've already talked. You filled out two forms. I apologize. Okay. Ruth Brolin?
You've heard enough from me, so I cede my time to Deacon Jim, if I may, please.
Okay. Well, there's been a couple of others that have ceded their time to the deacon as well. Bill Boss?
Bolstead.
Bolstead. and Jennifer Guthrie and Edward Hershey could be either one. They've all ceded their time to the deacon. So, deacon, come up and please state your name into the microphone.
Deacon Jim Vargas, and I'm the CEO and president of Father Joe's Villages. Mr. Chairman, commissioners, thank you for your time here. And actually, I had a prepared statement, and I'm going to put that aside, because I'm glad I've come up pretty much at the end. I think this is the end, pretty much at the end of your process before your vote, because it's given me the opportunity to listen to those before me, those for the proposal, but especially those who are opposed to the proposal. I think what's key and the message I want to deliver is that we can't continue to do what we've been doing in the past and expect different outcome. I think what we need to do in this whole process of homelessness is come up with creative solutions, new and creative solutions to address it in order to be able to work with the homeless who are on the street, but also work with the community. I mean, one of the things that I've been hearing today is people who have been turned away from St. Vincent's. Obviously, I don't like to hear that. And that's a conversation I have to have back home with my staff as to why is that happening. I have to believe there are reasons for that. But I want to know about those reasons. If there are people out there who feel that we've been turning them away, because what I want is for us to have a welcoming environment and be able to help and be the solution here. What we provide here is more than just a roof over everyone's head and also food for them to have to eat and sustain them. What we provide here, and it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's a very holistic approach. It's a very tailored approach to each individual, so that we provide medical services, we provide dental services, we provide the case management that they need, so that if there's a substance abuse issue there, whether drugs or alcohol, that we can address those issues as well. If their child care needs, I mean, whatever the needs are, we're equipped to be able to help them with those needs. And we've been doing it successfully for many years. We go back to 1950, so it's a long time. We need to work with the homeless. We need to work with the community. I had a meeting just yesterday with my staff, and I was telling them that I want to personally go out on the street and poke my head into the various merchants, as an example, to get to know them, to get to know what their concerns are and what their needs are, because I very much care for their concerns, and I want to take them into consideration as we work on our mission, and that's to eradicate homelessness in its entirety. So I am concerned about some of the things I've heard today, and I want us to be able to address them. I know that we can address them. I know that the proposal that we have before you, that I hope with which I hope you concur, that proposal goes a long way toward this fix, this solution. But I don't want to give you or anyone else the false perception that that's the be-all and end-all. Not at all. In fact, I applaud you for stepping up, the commission, the city, the mayor, the city council, the mayor as well, for putting some money towards this, because we need these funds, and we need much more than these funds. And I think everyone recognizes that. What we need to do is continue to fight in order to gain and garner the additional funds that are necessary so we could truly end homelessness. This $1.9 million, that total figure, whatever it is not going to do it. We do realize that, right? But it's a step in the right direction. We need additional funding, and I think St. Vincent very much should be a primary player there. We have a proven track record, but we also want to partner with other homeless providers as well, so that in as a coalition, we can really be effective out there in the community. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. That actually completes the speaker request forms. Deacon, I'm going to ask a favor of you. Would you please step up and turn off the microphone? Thank you. So anyhow, that completes the speaker request forms, and I seriously want to thank each and every one of you who took the time to fill out the form and to express what was obviously in so many cases your heartfelt thoughts and desires on both sides of the issue. And before we open this up for discussion amongst the board, what I'm going to say is this. I have had the opportunity to visit both of the tents, be inside, to walk about, to observe the processes. And there's no question that in my mind that the tents have provided over the years a very meaningful and valuable service. The council tells us what direction we're going to go in, and then the board helps to formulate some strategies to advise the staff as to how we think it's best to accomplish what the council's desires are. And the council has made it very clear that a change has to happen from what has gone on. And so the RFP was sent out as an attempt to effectuate that change. I was quite frankly surprised by the lack of more submittals. Everyone was given the opportunity to submit either for the daycare facility or to replace the tents or both. And as I say, I was shocked that we only got one submittal, and that fortunately was a submittal to accomplish both. And so that's all the comments I'm going to make at this moment, board. Commissioner Tussum?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I purposely held back my comments because I wanted to hear the public speak first, and I wanted to hear the pros and cons on both sides. It doesn't get beyond me that this is a huge issue that we're dealing with in this city and that it's exceedingly difficult to resolve by one organization with one approach. This is a very, very difficult issue, and I can appreciate the complexity of it. Let me say that I'm very, very familiar with the both entities that have been discussed here today. I personally have made sure that we have funded the Alpha Project in the past through my company, as well as St. Vincent de Paul's. I know the work that Bob McElroy has done. I know that the work that the folks from St. Vincent de Paul have been doing over the years, and I appreciate what the contributions that they have made to our community in trying to resolve this very, very difficult situation. The problem is, and we all see it, this problem for us with homelessness today is not getting any better. It's getting worse. We can talk about the fact that we're throwing a lot of resources at it. All you need to do is drive around like I do and see it. We can't put our heads in the sand. This problem is getting worse. And so we need to ask ourselves, do we continue to do what we're doing, or do we seek other ways of trying to resolve this problem? That's the issue. We all appreciate that this is a very difficult matter and that we have to maybe try different approaches. Now, my concern, I do have concerns with a couple of aspects of what's brought forward today. Number one is the transition plan. It is concerning to me that we shut down the tents on April 1st and that we don't have the inventory of beds until, I believe, it's July. That's concerning to me, and I'd like to hear staff respond on how you try to mitigate that issue. I'm also concerned about this plan, the way that we're approaching it, and by the way, I want to disclose it. This commissioner is open to going with this new approach, but I'm concerned about the encumbering of future budgets or depending upon future budgets in order for this to continue. We admit in our staff report, and Mr. Davis, maybe you can respond and tell me otherwise, but we don't have these funds that we're expecting to fund these programs in future budgets approved at this point. And so that's an issue. Now, To Deacon Jim and the rest of the staff, appreciate you all, what you guys are doing here, and I appreciate your presence here and your testimony here today. I think that we, and I really appreciate that, Deacon Jim, you came right out and said, it's not enough for us to be doing things the way we're doing them. We have to seek new ways of being able to do our work. That's real important. That's real important. We definitely have to do that. We heard a lot of people testify here today about that they perhaps have not had the experience with St. Vincent de Paul's in the past. And as we look to depend upon St. Vincent de Paul's more to take on a lead role in this matter, we need to be looking at our acceptance policies. It's not enough just to look at this and be proud of the services or the history of what we've done in the past. We have to look at ourselves and say, where are the gaps between the work that's being done right now under the temporary tent situation and with the role that we're going to be playing into the future? This is not a one-size-fits-all. We all acknowledge this is a very difficult problem that we deal with. And so as we move toward this, and I'm going to support it, we need to be looking at how do we close the gaps between as we take this role on. But, Mr. Davis, I am interested in two issues. One is, again, the transition plan and to see if there's any movement there, as well as the future budgets, the dependency on future budgets that still haven't been approved yet.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes, I definitely believe that change has to happen, and I have complete faith that St. Vincent's will do a fine job in everything they do. My concern is this transition time that will cut people, no matter how many people, one or 70 or 200, some people that are being covered and assisted now with the Alpha Project will be unable temporarily to find another place to go. That really upsets me. It's like when something comes up, a new project or a new idea that is wonderful, there's an old saying, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a wonderful project. Would someone explain to me if there has been some money put up by Mayor Faulkner, I believe, to help with the transition? Is there any way that Alpha Project could stay open during this transition time from April till July 1st or something, and maybe somehow some extra counselors to help these people that will not be helped be able to find a different avenue so they will not be thrown right back out into the street? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gentry?
Two comments. One is about the basic relationship structure here, and the second is about transition. And for the newer board members, the Housing Commission was not involved at all in any way, form, or fashion with the winter's tents until 5 years ago. The city, from the inception of the tents in 1986 until 2010, the city did that directly out of the mayor's office, with no exceptions. In 2010, the mayor's office asked the Housing Commission to step in and administer this process. They felt, and we agreed with them, that we were better equipped to handle that process than was the mayor's office. Mayor Sanders thought that, and that has continued for the last 5 years. The Housing Commission technically has a contract with the city administration to administer the winter shelter program on behalf of the city. This board, if it wanted to, could back out of the entire deal with a 30-day notice. I believe it's 30 days, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So we are here on behalf of the city doing the city's work because they ask us to. And prior to five years ago, this wasn't part of our business. This board, over the past 5 years or so since that time, has more and more grown is homelessness portfolio, if you will. And we're doing things now far beyond what we ever thought we would be doing when I got here 7 years ago. Witness our Housing First San Diego policy agenda last November. So this represents a growth in the methodology, if you will, of the mission of this agency. Okay, so this, we're basically doing this on behalf of the city and by contract with them. I'll also point out they could take this back anytime they want to, although I doubt seriously that's going to happen for a variety of reasons. That's one thing. I think it's good to know that set of relationships. And like any contract, we agreed to do accomplish certain goals for consideration, meaning the money. So we do this with the money the city gives us. And we don't have other funds beyond what the city gives us to do this with, because our programs are segregated by cost. That being said, traditionally, with only two exceptions, the tents have gone up around Thanksgiving to December the 1st, and then shut down entirely April the 1st with no transition to anything. So absent this plan, those tents will shut down April the 1st anyway, because we don't have the money to keep them operating. So that absent this plan, had the council not directed us to look for alternate approach 6 months ago, we would be rating these tents to be shut down, taken down, folded up, stored to be put back up next November. So the fact that the tents, there, you've heard requests for the tents to stay up, there is no funding to do that with. And there hasn't been, with two exceptions, since they were initially put up in 1986. One exception last year, the tents were extended from April to July the 1st. Year before that, under a different mayor, they were left up for about a year and a half straight, because Mayor Filner then found extra funding at that time. So with those exceptions, the tents go up in November, come down in April. And that's exactly how the plan is for this year right now, absent something different. Secondly, on the transition. Initially, with the tents shutting down April the 1st by current contract, and with the new money that we're talking about today taking effect July the 1st, we had a gap of 3 months. The money that St. Vincent's is using right now for their transitional effort at the Mirabilis Center ends April the 30th. So they've got a 2-month gap on money. We've got a 3-month gap on services. I took this problem to the mayor, and the mayor came up with money that we can use to transition. So rather than the tents shutting down April the 1st, which they were going to do anyway, and the Mirabilis Center not being available for funding purposes until July 1st, we have the funding to gradually transition into the beds in the Mirabilis Center. And we could ask Ruth to talk about that again if you wish. But I think the transition plan that we have in here addresses the issue, I think, is the best I know how to address it.
The truth is, there's going to be some people who are going to be displaced. And they're going to be displaced because, as Mr. Gentry just said, there weren't funds that were intended to keep it open at any time during this fiscal year. And so by creating these additional beds sooner, we're going to have fewer people on the street at that point. There's been criticism of St. Vincent's today, and I'm not in a position to say that criticism was deserved or not deserved, but what I do know is this, and I asked this question early on, seems like about 2 hours ago, and that is, St. Vincent's never had as a specific assignment the assignment that they're taking on with this contract. They've had a different business model that they've operated on from their inception, and this represents a significant change in that business model. And so those who were denied access to some of the services and shelters that St. Vincent's had were denied access, most likely, under the old business model. What I asked early on was, will the intake process under this contract be essentially the same as it is under the current contract with Alpha Project and the operation of the tent. And I was assured that essentially the two intake processes will be the same, which would mean then if that becomes true, then it should mean that we should have a whole lot fewer complaints about people who were able to get into the tent but not able to get into St. Vincent's, because we're going to be looking at the same process for these particular people, for this 350 beds on it. Commissioner Davis?
Yes. Could I please hear from someone at St. Vincent that can give me an idea of how their process might be changed during, as they take this over?
Ruth Bruland, Executive Director. The Alpha has, with the cold weather program, has utilized a tool called the VI-SPADAT, and it assesses through a series of questions the kinds of physical issues, behavioral, mental issues, addiction issues, the things that are contributing, one, to someone's homelessness, but also to their vulnerability, meaning the risk that their health, their life, is at stake if they continue homeless on the street. And that tool is the identical one to what St. Vincent's will be using. Before, as I stated, we did first come, first serve. So when the beds were full, the beds were full. Now, as someone comes to the door, that we are doing this VI-SPADAT that assesses that vulnerability, and then we seek to then respond as quickly as possible to get that most vulnerable person off the street. HUD is ultimately demanding this, and it only makes sense. The challenge with this is we haven't done gotten the results of the count, the last homeless count, but so I'm looking at numbers from a year ago. There are 4,000 people on the streets. We don't have 4,000 beds. And so the challenge is, you hear these stories and it just wrecks you when you hear them. There's not enough room. Sorry. So we must get the whole community involved in this process to tap into those resources. And Rick, I can't tell you how impressed I am with your vision of the potential of pairing these two things, because we have to streamline it for the communication to be what it needs to be. And so it's an uphill battle, but we cannot give up.
One
Commissioner
other thing,
Davis?
Oh, I'm sorry. Cancer, having cancer is something that's become very close to my heart recently. And in earlier comments, I'm just curious about this. There was a person that had cancer,
right,
and her husband was healthy.
Right.
So he didn't get as many points or whatever as far,
correct,
as then they would separate,
right,
them. Now, I'm just curious, is there any way when you have your process or something to realize the importance of a caretaker and support for someone who is so very, very ill? Thank you.
That's part of the challenge with the design of different structures. In the Palmer-Obley Center, the 80 beds for the women are on the second floor, and the 270 beds for the men are on the third floor. We do have programming that allows a husband and wife, or a male and female, to stay together in our family program if they have children. But in this particular facility, the necessity is that the two sexes are separated.
Thank you.
Mr. Gentry?
Let me address the financial capacity issue, too. There are resource limitations. And there always have been. There have been times when the tents have turned people away, too. So we don't need to think that there's always been a bed there either. There was been a couple of times the last couple of years when the weather was so severe that we opened up the day center for sleeping purposes as well, when it was necessary. So I'm saying that because I don't want you all to think that this coming winter, if somebody gets turned away, that we misrepresented this. There may be resource limitations. We don't have the money for the entire set of problems right now. May never have. all the more reason, as Ruth said, to look to rationalize these programs. Let me point out that a huge step forward is something the city council did a year ago. The VI-SPDAP, by the way, is an acronym, and I can't remember what the letters stand for. It doesn't matter. It's basically a standardized intake and assessment center process, rather, and then an attempt to do something with somebody that so they don't just go in and out of the system. That was only, we were only able to implement that a year ago because the city appropriated $400,000 to come up with a computerized data set where everybody could track the customers. So that now you come in, you're assessed, you're in an information system that gets shared, and it's a more streamlined way of dealing with people. There is a general target and goal that somebody will be assessed and will have another disposition within 45 days. Doesn't always happen. You heard from some people here today where that's not happened, but it's a target, it's an average, and the average is actually 29 days right now for people coming in and going to something better. So I want you all to understand that this is not a solution to every homeless problem in the world, and that we have our limitations too, not only on the transition, but on how this program is going to work. But I do think this is the next step forward historically, in the way this city deals with its homelessness issues. You look at the VI-SPDAD and the coordinated intake system put into effect a year ago with this coordinated system, and I think those two are good 1-2 counterpunches to take us to the next level.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments on part of the board? If not, Commissioner Cerdy?
And please forgive my ignorance if this question has already been answered. But having reviewed all the materials and heard the comments today, I'm still left with the thought, what's the success ratio? I haven't really heard a success story with respect to I went into either organization and I came out within a certain period of time and I have a job and I have a home. I'm still not clear on the success factor. And I don't know if that's an impossible area to track, but I really respect what the city and what this group is trying to accomplish. And I respect all of the work that you did to help us understand what are our next steps. But I don't hear from the fact that we've got a tremendous amount of success in family groups. I've seen some of the projects in the past that were built with the funds that we've been able to obtain from HUD and all the other resources that Rick has been able to acquire. And it looks good from the inside of their new home and that sort of thing. But how do we prevent people from rolling back into the same environment again? Maybe there's no answer to that. Thank you for listening.
Melissa, do you have a response to that?
Sure. I can answer in part some of those. So on a monthly basis, both operators of the tents report to us their success rates and their outputs. So as of January 31st, or no, I'm sorry, as for FY14, between both tents, about 23% of folks exited to either permanent housing or some other form of longer-term housing. And in a report that we received from St. Vincent de Paul Village of folks that are exiting the Paul Mirable Center under its transitional housing program, so understanding that we're proposing a new model here, but about 53% of people are exiting to permanent housing or longer-term housing. So our hope is and our proposal is that they'll be able to better increase those numbers as a result of this new system.
Okay, commissioners, any other questions, comments? If not, is there a motion of some sort?
So moved.
You've moved in favor of the proposal as submitted by staff.
You're right.
That was Commissioner Spoon. Commissioner Davis has indicated that she seconds the motion as submitted by staff. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any last opportunity for its comment? Seeing none, I will ask council to call the question, or councilor to call the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The commission will now proceed with a roll call vote in accordance with the provisions of the Brown Act with respect to item number 100. Chair Grambling.
Yes.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Commissioner Hubbard and Moraga are not present. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
Commissioner Urtasun.
Aye.
The matter passed by a vote of 5-0 with Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga not present.
Okay. Staff, again, thank you very much for the work that I know that you've been doing. To those in the audience who came here specifically for this item, again, I want to thank you for your presence. I want to thank you for your passion, and I want to thank you for your input. And we're going to look forward to working very closely in this new relationship. It's an old relationship in a new manner, and we'll look forward to future reports on this. Thank you. Next, I call item 101. I guess I can give people an opportunity to transition out if they wish. I'm going to ask for those of you who are intent on leaving the room, if you would carry on your conversations outside in the hallway so that we can continue with our next item. Okay, item 101, same team?
Same team.
Please proceed.
Good morning, commissioners. Again, Jeff Davis, Chief Operating Officer. With me is Melissa Peterman, Director of Homeless Housing and Innovations Team. We are presenting the proposed fiscal year 2016 agreements for the city's homeless programs. The Housing Commission administers the contracts for the city's homeless services programs based on a memorandum of understanding between the Housing Commission and the city that took effect on July 1st, 2010. This MOU was amended and restated as approved by the Housing Commission Board on May 9th, 2014, and the City Council on June 17th, 2014. Melissa will again walk you through the action items. We are requesting your recommendation to the Housing Authority for approval.
Thank you, and good morning again. In preparation for FY 2016, we are asking the Housing Commission to recommend the Housing Authority authorize the execution of FY 2016 agreements with 8 nonprofit agencies for the operation of 5 homeless services programs, authorize the President and CEO to substitute funding sources and increase contract amounts by up to 20% of the total contract amount if necessary and as funding is available for such purposes, and authorize the expenditure of up to $570,000 in city general funds, $509,477 in federal community development block grants, $762,074 in federal emergency solutions grant funds, $274,000 in housing trust funds, and $40,000 in housing commission funds as part of the Housing Commission's proposed FY 2016 budget. These amounts include funds to the subrecipients and Housing Commission administrative funds. The specific contracts staff is asking the Housing Commission to recommend to the Housing Authority are as follows. A contract for operation of the Connections Housing Interim Bed Program by People Assisting the Homeless in the amount of $688,838 funded through CDBG, ESG, City General Fund, and Housing Commission dollars. This program operates short-term interim beds for approximately 500 homeless individuals each year. Second, a contract for operation of the Cortez Hill Family Center by the YWCA of San Diego County in the amount of $669,209 funded through CDBG, ESG, and Housing Trust Fund. Cortez Hill provides short-term housing and supportive services to at least 150 homeless families with children on an annual basis. Third, an agreement for the Housing Commission to administer ESG funding in the amount of $340,483 through Rapid Rehousing Renewal Contracts with Alpha Project for the Homeless, Interfaith Shelter Network, PATH, St. Vincent de Paul Village, and Veterans Village of San Diego for the purpose of providing short-term rental assistance and case management services so that participants can obtain and maintain permanent housing. Rapid rehousing operators project to rehouse up to 140 individuals and families in FY 2016. Fourth, an agreement with Girls Think Tank in the amount of $138,750 for oversight and management of the Homeless Transitional Storage Center. The center provides 350 bins to participants as they look for work, attend classes, or meet with a service provider. Annually, the center assists approximately 2,000 individuals. And lastly, an agreement with Mental Health Systems in the amount of $185,000 to operate transitional beds for the Serial Inebriate Program, the aim of which is to reduce the number of chronic homeless alcoholics who cycle in and out of detoxification centers, county jail, and local emergency rooms by providing shelter and wraparound services. That concludes our report, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Can you tell me how these have either increased or decreased since last year?
All of these amounts are the same amount as last year with the exception of ESG funds, which are a slight decrease. For the past couple fiscal years, we've been spending back amounts of ESG. For FY16, we will only be spending FY16 allocation of ESG.
Commissioner Tessa?
On the contracts that we have with these organizations, have we revised anything on those contracts? Are you feeling comfortable with the deliverables of what we ask them to do? And how do they report back to us on an annual basis on what they delivered?
Each provider provides us a monthly report, a quarterly report, and also an annual report, and we review those numbers. And then, based on what we find, make determinations and recommendations on what we should do in future contracts. All of our grantees have been performing as we expected, but we're always open to making changes, both from our part and theirs.
Commissioner Spill?
May I just ask how timely is the Housing Commission in reimbursing the nonprofits? They're advancing the money, so how long does it take for them to receive the reimbursement?
Each of our providers provides a request for reimbursement to us by the 15th of each month for the prior month's expenses, and we reimburse them by the end of the month, so by the 30th or 31st of that month.
Is there any delay? The Housing Commission is collecting from the city in part, for some of them. So is there any delay in that process?
We reimburse the subrecipients first, and then we seek reimbursement from the city. In terms of a delay, it just depends on sometimes the back and forth between us and the providers if we need additional proof of payments, and same process with the city.
Counselor, you had a comment you wanted to add?
Yes, I do. With respect to attachment one to the report, which is a sole source justification, I just for the record wanted to indicate that all but one of these contracts is a renewal option, and so the sole source justifications are not required, except for the Mental Health Systems, Inc., and that's the only one where it is required, and that justification is appropriate. But for the purposes of these contracts, these are exercising options that already exist in the contract.
Any other questions? Commissioner Cassel?
Do you have any speaker slips on this?
No, this is item 101.
Move approval.
Okay, Commissioner Tassin has moved approval of the recommendation as submitted by staff. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis has seconded the motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, Counselor, will you call the roll?
I will. Thank you. The Commission will now proceed with a roll call vote on item number 101. Chair Gramling.
Yes. Aye.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga are not present. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
Commissioner Urtasun.
Aye.
The matter passed on a vote of 5-0 with Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga absent.
Thank you very much. Next we'll call item 102, Hotel Churchill. We're going to have the presentation by staff, and then we have one speaker request form. proceed as soon as you're able.
Good morning, Chair Grambling and Housing Commissioners. I'm Ann Kern, and the Vice President of Housing Finance and Program Development. With me is Mike Pavko, our Executive Director of Housing Development Partners. This morning, we are bringing forward the final recommendation to fund additional funds to the Hotel Churchill development to accomplish the rehabilitation of Hotel Churchill. So the recommendations before you this morning are to approve an additional $3.3 million of grant and loan funds for the rehabilitation of Hotel Churchill, to execute new and amend existing documents to accomplish the addition of those funds, and to grant our Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer a designee to execute and adjust financing terms as necessary. Maximum funding amounts for this development with your approval would be $9.2 million of HUD moving to work grants, $2.3 million of Housing Commission local funds, and then the $3.8 million of previously approved loan for a total of just over $15 million of Housing Commission financing. This is a housing first development, one of our housing first developments under our new housing first program, which was adopted last November. And just to refresh your memory, the housing first program model was that we would fund up to $30 million over a 3-year period. We would commit up to 1,500 federal rent to housing vouchers. And this action today is renovate the Hotel Churchill, 72 units of permanent supportive housing, and investing moving to work federal funds in the acquisition of the property, as well as dedicating commission-owned housing units under this Housing First program model. A summary of the development, we've brought this forward several times, but in case anyone is not familiar with the project, it is the rehabilitation of a 7-story vacant historic 101-year-old single room occupancy hotel at 827 C Street. The proposed 72 unit of affordable housing will include 56 units, for homeless veterans, 8 units for adults exiting the correction system and needing supportive services, and 8 units for youth aging out of the foster care system. And this is a renovation that will take 94 existing units, expand them, renovate them, and create 72, I want to say more appropriate units to house the homeless. There will be on-site social and case management services. It will be affordable for 65 years, and this board and the Housing Authority did previously approve the development plan. Some of the rehabilitation will be restoration of the historic facade, complete interior demo and reconstruction, so it's a gut rehab. There'll be new unit interiors and completely new building systems. It will comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. There will be some new site improvements, including a new garden area, taking advantage of an unused parking area. There will be a new exterior staircase and new common area and service coordinator offices. The design work has been completed. The interior demolition has already abated the hazardous materials. Construction bids have been solicited, and construction bids will include federal prevailing wages. Allgaier General Contractors was the lowest responsive bidder. And due to the final construction bids, we now have a better idea of the cost, and it does necessitate an additional $3.3 million of funding to accomplish this plan. This is just a site map. It's just outside of our windows. We can see it from here. Street location. A nice picture of the building as it exists currently. Couple different views. And as we noted, this development was previously approved by the Housing Commission. This will increase proposed moving to work funds by $993,000 and in addition put an additional $2.3 million of local funds, which could include some SRO in lieu fees, inclusionary housing funds, and housing trust fund monies. Civic San Diego has previously approved $3 million to this development, and they will be taking a companion item to the Housing Authority for approval to modifications to the original plan. Housing Development Partners is our development partner. They are the Commission's nonprofit affiliate. They are an experienced developer, and they are in compliance with all Housing Commission loan requirements. The affordability on these units, all 72 of these 73 units will be affordable, with affordability ranging from 50 to 80% of area median income. There will be sponsor-based vouchers, so in reality, the tenants will not pay more than 30% of their income on rents, and there will be one unit for a manager's unit that will be unrestricted. The source of funds for the development, the total development cost is just $20.5 million. And the Housing Commission investment is about $15 million. And with your approval, today we would take forward this item to the Housing Authority on April the 7th, and Housing Development Partners would be able to close shortly thereafter and start construction on May 1st. With that, I'll let Mike add any additional comments.
Yes, thank you, Ann, and good morning, members of Council. As previously indicated, the construction bids came in significantly higher than we anticipated, based on our cost estimator that we utilized to, put together our initial pro forma. I'd just like to talk a little bit more about, some of the reasons why that may have occurred. One is competition. The contractor pricing has steadily been increasing and subcontractor bids have become significantly less competitive. Additionally, contractor contingency, the GCs that submitted bids informed us that due to unknown factors that arise on complicated historic restorations, the subcontractors include substantial contingencies in their numbers to mitigate risk. We are told that the restoration of the historic facade of the Churchill is particularly complex. And then three, additional scope. Through the demolition phase, we discovered a number of items that needed to be addressed that were not previously anticipated. Those included additional fireproofing, additional facade treatments for the historic restoration, and additional structural work on the seventh floor. I'd also like to add that in order to minimize the financial impact of the Housing Commission, that the proposed financing eliminates $1 million of developer fee and defers the remaining $400,000 for Housing Development Partners. Finally, I would like to mention that there are a number of energy upgrades that we are making in accordance with the Housing Commission's sustainability guidelines, including Energy Star appliances, LED lighting, low-E glazing, new energy-efficient building systems, and water-conserving fixtures. I'd like to open it up for any questions.
Before we do, we have a speaker request. Martha Welch, please step forward, turn the microphone on, and identify yourself.
Martha Welch, downtown. I'm glad to see moving speed on this one. It's been sitting too long. Yes, we build these expensive apartments in every all over instead of these. Remember, we have 12 million in the budget, so we can more projects like this. There's another one down the street, but hearing this, maybe a new one would be better than the old one. Hysterical might be too expensive. Let's think of more projects like this because we need them, and I'm glad it's moving very fast. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Commissioners, Commissioner Tassin, you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This matter came before the Real Estate Committee, and we discussed it extensively. It's a bit of a painful matter to come before us, given the fact that the cost estimates came in unexpectedly higher than what we had forecasted them initially. And we discussed it extensively at the committee. I mean, we are where we are. The estimator clearly missed some things when they did the evaluation of this. And, you know, we got to get the project done. But it's a bit painful to see this reach the levels that it has in terms of cost.
Any other members of the commission want to say anything? Have any questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the proposal. Is there, Commissioner Tassin has seconded that motion. Counselor, will you call the roll?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The commission will now proceed with the roll call vote on item number 102. Chair Gramley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga are not present. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
And Commissioner Urtasun. The matter passed 5-0 with Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga absent.
Thank you. Item 104 is the fiscal year 2016 budget. In the interest of time, we're not going to go through the entire slideshow. Okay. Commissioner Spoon has assured me that she's going to summarize everything, so.
I assured the chair.
Okay, so I will just say one thing while I'm up here instead of the whole thing. Really, what I really wanted to make sure we do get a chance to say up front is how sincerely appreciative we are of the efforts of Bobby Spoon helping us through this this budget. Your excellent guidance, your insights, and especially your commitment to making sure we got this right the first time. Deeply appreciated, and I know that Leslie and Tracy are very much wanted me to say that. So this will be presented to you. We had originally, we're going to give it to you in good detail, so that, some of our newer commissioners would be able to, see all the different things that we do, but we hear our direction. We're going to go through just the important points today. And I'll turn it over to our CFO, Leslie.
And for those of you who don't know, this is an initial presentation and it's basically a workshop. And then next month, this item will come back onto the agenda for a full-fledged presentation and proposal. So we're not shortcutting our budget process. We're just shortcutting the workshop.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I could, if any board member between now and the next board meeting wants to sit down and have a one-on-one to see what's here, just let us know. We'll be happy to do so with you.
Good morning, Chair Gramlin and Commissioners, or I think at this point I should say good afternoon. I'm Leslie Levinson, the CFO and Vice President of the Housing Commission. I have with me our Director of Grants and Reporting, Tracy McDermott. She oversees the budget in the Finance Department. I first would like to add my thanks to Commissioner Spoon. Thank you very much for your guidance and oversight. We greatly appreciate it. It's invaluable to our team. Our budget process is quite extensive, starting in December with all departments within the commission involved. Budget development as well as monitoring throughout the year is not just a finance tool, but a management tool. Our extensive budget process helps keep us focused on our goals and ultimately allocating resources in line with our mission and strategic plan. I have quite a few slides, but we'll skip through some of them in the essence of time. But first of all, the budget request that will come before you next meeting is for total funding sources of $325 million. We were going to go over our mission, but just a reminder, we keep our mission in mind when developing our budget. And as a reminder of our organizational structure, we have four major divisions: real estate, rental assistance, homeless housing innovations, and operations. Our real estate, rental assistance, and homeless housing innovation divisions also are considered our major lines of business. As we created the budget, we considered our strategic plan, and we went over those goals A, B, and C as part of our base for developing the budget. Some additional factors we considered is the class and compensation study that's in process. It's in process but not yet completed. Federal funding has stabilized, and our program reserves are reduced due to the additional investment in Hotel Churchill as well as additional purchase of a property. I'm going to skip the summary since we'll go back to the detail further on in the presentation. our reserves, just a reminder, a majority of our reserves are restricted for specific purposes. Only our contingency reserves are truly unrestricted. We have a total of 69.2 million in reserves, but only 17% or 11.8 million of those reserves are unrestricted. We have three different categories of reserves, which you can see. We have program reserves for specific purposes, property reserves for our properties, replacement and capital improvements, and as I noted, the contingency reserves. Since we're about the people, we want to highlight the services that we provide. I'm going to skip over that since you can read that at your leisure since we're in a more of a hurry. Let's see. Yeah, I got a 15. That's fine. Patreon. Okay. So on our, go ahead and go to 17. As part of our budget guidelines, we determine our available funding sources and projected revenue. We always balance the budget, and we establish or maintain appropriate reserve levels, which I mentioned before is 5%, or 5% of our annual revenue is what our contingency reserve is, and we are in compliance with that in this budget. On the next few slides, we're going to talk about business volume. We can read that at your leisure. I wanted to outline the enormous amount of work that our team throughout the Housing Commission performs. So you'll see that broken down by division. Why don't you go to page 25. For the source of funds, so we'll be summarizing the source of funds here. This is a fairly detailed schedule for you. You can see in circled in red some numbers that I want to point out to you. Our fund balance rollover, which is the beginning of the year balance, is estimated at $90.4 million from FY15 to FY16, plus the projected revenue of $234.5 million, which gets us to the total source of funds of $325 million. The fund balance in FY16 compared to 15 was reduced due to the use of some of the reserves for Village Senior North acquisition as well as Hotel Churchill renovations. And as far as the decrease in the total fund balance, that's mostly the same because of reduction from reserves. As far as some reasons for changes in revenue, go to the next thing. The Section 8 MPW funds decreased $3.5 million, primarily due to reduced expenses, which correlates to reduced funding. The savings will be available in the future for other MPW programs. We don't recognize these revenues until they're drawn upon. The revenue for rehab and our removal of lead reflects 100% reduction, which as of now, this funding source is no longer actively being pursued. Our real estate revenue increased $1.6 million due to increased occupancy and rental rates. The growth in this revenue stream is net of the amount of, quote, free rent that we are providing for the 25 units as part of our Housing First initiative for the homeless. The amount of rent forgone in this program is $420,000 a year. We'll go to the next 28. This chart, just for your reference, reflects the percentage of our total source of funds by funding source. As you can see, still 2/3 of our revenue or source of funds comes from federal funds. Now for the use of funds. This chart summarizes our use of funds by major expense category. As you can see, personnel costs increased $2.8 million, which I'll be speaking out more in depth. Non-personnel, $9.5 million. And the total increase, total cost was 5% over the year from FY15 to 16. For the reason for major changes in those expenses, our housing program expense increased $13.1 million due to increased RHF funds and housing choice vouchers. We assumed 100% lease up in our housing choice voucher program, and we received some additional VASH vouchers. Our property expense increased $470,000 due to increasing utilities and other miscellaneous costs at the property level. You will note in the revenue from our properties discussed previously that we increased 5.7% on our revenue, but the cost only increased 3.3%, which is a nice positive. Our capital expenditures decreased $4.2 million due to reduction in planned major rehabilitation projects with the completion of significant efforts related to state site conversions. Our salary and wages increased by $2.1 million do the following. A set-aside contingency of 5% for our class and compensation study, which is in process. It's a placeholder. We have 9 new positions, which I'll speak about in a moment. And we have a 2.5% cost of living increase. Our fringe benefits increase correspondingly with the wage increases. The total budget staff for full-time equivalent, or FTE, from year to year, you can see that in 2014, we budgeted 285 positions. We reduced that to 275 in 2015, and we're back up to almost the level of 2014 in the proposed budget at a level of 284. In FY15, the staffing was reduced to sequestration further concerns and future funding concerns. Okay. One of the main reasons for the staffing increase relates to some maintenance workers that we're bringing on. We currently have a service contract for maintenance. In the budget, we have added 4 maintenance positions to replace this outside service contract. Bringing this work in-house will assist us to comply with the Section 3 HUD requirement. Section 3, which the Commission must comply with, requires that to the greatest extent feasible, employment and business opportunities be directed toward low and very low-income persons. Converting this service contract to in-house workers will assist us to further comply with this requirement. The staffing by major division is outlined here on the next slide, and you can see side by side, how that has changed. And you'll note for the staffing from 2014 was 285, going down to 284 in 2016. But you'll also note that the changes in staffing, the increases from 14 to 16, were in the program areas where operations support actually went down slightly. This reflects the funding uses by major division within the Housing Commission. So you can see the majority of the funding still goes to rental assistance and then real estate and then operations support and then our homeless housing innovations team. This reflects from the previous slide, we showed the operations support. Now this shows it by department. You can see that by department, how the fundings are allocated for this support. The majority or the largest funding goes to IT, which reflects our focus on business innovation and use of technology as we move forward. We already talked about the capital expenditures, but this clearly lays out. You can see the change from the reduction in the state site conversions and the increase in capital improvements related to our properties. And finally, we'll be asking at the next commission meeting for your approval of this budget with funding sources of $325 million. I again want to thank Commissioner Spoon for her guidance and support. It's greatly appreciated. I'd also like to thank my staff for all their immense efforts in preparing this budget, in particular, Tracy McDermott, who's my right hand and extremely invaluable to me. And I thank you for your time. I hope that was fast enough.
Well, you exceeded the 6 minutes that she promised.
Ah.
No, she said 6.
Was it 6?
But
6.5.
By 50%? 9? You did a good job. Thank you very much. And next month, we're going to give you lots of time to talk about it. Okay. Mr. Gentry?
One other kudo. That's thanks to our new CFO. Leslie took over without a hitch. The transition was seamless. She's done an excellent job, and we very much appreciate that she's here.
All right. Members of the commission, any last-minute items you want to bring up? Seeing no indication of such, technically I have to move to adjourn. So is there a motion to adjourn? Commissioner Tassin is quicker than anyone else, so he's moved to adjourn. I'm sorry, but Commissioner Davis was right there on his boot heels, so it has been moved and seconded. Counselor, will you call the vote?
I will. Thank you. The commission will now vote on the motion to adjourn by roll call. Commissioner Grambling.
Yes.
Vice Chair Spoon.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga are absent. Commissioner Surdy.
Yes.
And Commissioner Urtasun. The matter passed on a vote of 5-0 with Commissioners Hubbard and Moraga absent.